This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan, where I do believe I just got the best of Jared Sandler on a question exchange. Now, it's time for the C Block starring Corey Majors.
Thank you very much, Kevin. I know it's Wednesday, but that's how it's spelled.
Sure.
I do want to do a shout out.
Sophomore.
Can I say his last name or should I not?
I don't know who you're going to shout out.
I'm going to say Jonathan at AutoZone.
Oh, okay, sure.
So if you don't know this about AutoZone, I can change a battery, all right? And I just noticed that my car like was dragging a little bit, and as I was starting it up, it would kind of like take a minute. I was like, uh-oh, something's wrong with the battery. Open the hood, and I see a little fluid on the top. I'm like, okay, there's something wrong. I need to go get this taken care of. Take it up to AutoZone, and if you don't know this, if your car battery is dead or dying or whatever, they'll change it for you. They'll go out there, take it all apart, and put a new one in for you, and then they'll take the old battery. So if you ever need that, that is available to you. If you need
probably still charge you for the new battery.
They definitely charged me, and battery prices have gone up. It looks like so. But it was he got out there, and I have never changed this battery before.
Okay.
Somehow the lead had carved into the post. So like there's a post, and Kevin, it was so tight around it that it was cutting into it.
Yeah.
So when he was just trying, you can't just slide the lead off, and he was out there, Kevin, with some tool, and he was dropping that MF-er, this B right here. And I just looked at him and I said, I just want you to know, I'm happy that you talk to it the way I do, because that's the same thing as whenever you see, you know, somebody high up in their company and they're out there talking to you just like they're really nice, you know, just like you're a regular dude. He's doing this and he sounded just like me when he was like, this MF-er won't come out of here. And I was just like, that's me. That's how I would feel right now.
I kind of want that as a drop, but I understand your bigger point, man. That's a question I'm curious about. What inanimate object drives you the craziest?
Ooh, man. There've been plenty of times, you know, if you don't have the key for a tire, that'll get you. You have to have one of those keys, because those things have those locks on them.
It used to be Noah's car seat / stroller when it was all built in one. Because I was like, I know I put it in the right spot and I pulled the right lever, and it's like, but you didn't. And I was like, I did. And it can't talk back because it's a stroller.
It's a cable, not a lead. Okay. I don't care. I'm not a mechanic. I'm a radio host, but thanks. But if you're a mechanic, I appreciate you telling me the words.
Doesn't sound like you did. It did not sound like you appreciated that person's comment.
But anyway.
What the hell just happened?
Kevin, have you ever felt sorry for your opponent? And what did you do? Because Jonathan Greenard of the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah.
Said that they kind of started to feel bad for Daniel Jones, and we're still just completely taking away everything he wants to do. He said, hey, it's good to be on the other side of it, and it's our job not to be on that side. But he said, yeah, we kind of started feeling a little bad for him as we're still just completely taking away everything he wants to do.
No, I am the person that watches the college football game, and the other team scores a touchdown at the end of the game to make it like 45-10 instead of 45-3. And I'm like, bull crap. That was a 42-point game. Now it's going to look like it was a 35-point game. Bull crap. So, no, I don't feel sorry for my opponent. Be better.
I remember one time the college football team I was pulling for was beating A&M so bad that they could have put 100 points on them.
I agree with that. It ended up being 77-0, and I remember that because a Texas A&M player got a sack and started to dance around when it was like legitimately 70-0, and I thought, you need to stop that. What are you doing? You know what? One time, I hope somebody felt bad for me when they were defeating me as an opponent. I was in a debate tournament as a freshman because I know how to party, and I went up against this senior from Plano ISD. I can't remember which school. He was defeating me so badly. He used at least two words. I was like, I don't even know what that word means. Like, I didn't say that in my response, but in my head, I'm like, how am I supposed to rebut that? I don't know what that word means. And I couldn't just pull out my smartphone or whatever. I hope he felt bad for me in that moment, because I felt bad for me.
Yeah. I know I've watched my kids' games, and I know what level that group can play at. And then all of a sudden you see this team that showed up and they're, you know, wearing the all black Yankee uniforms that are exactly the same as the Yankees.
Yep.
Their coach is standing there with his Oakleys on and he's, you know, got his directions and he spits his chaw in the middle. And you're like, this is a kid's game. But this team is, they're going to be all the elites later on in life. They're going to be the best players. And they're just pinging one after another, just ropes out in the outfield. And your kids look like dummies out there picking flowers. And you're like, what is happening? And you kind of want to look at the other team and go, hey, can they just can you just stop? And they're like, no, this is our way of showing your kids how to learn how to lose.
I've told you the story about this where I saw instant comeuppance in this situation. It's Fort Worth Nolan against John Paul II in a football game the first year John Paul II had athletics. Fort Worth Nolan was crushing them, and they went to a running clock for the entirety of the second half. That's how out of control this game was. So Fort Worth Nolan's trying to take it easy. They're like, you know what? That's fine. Run up the middle. Got like 2-3 yards. John Paul calls a timeout. And you're like, what the hell? Is somebody hurt? Fort Worth Nolan again. 2 or 3 yards. Run straight up the middle. John Paul calls a timeout again, and I'm like, oh, I see how it is. So it's like 3rd and 4, 3rd and 5. Fort Worth Nolan comes out 4 wide, and they just throw a bomb down the field for a touchdown. And I was like, in your face, John Paul II, that's what you get. They were ready to just run this game out, and you're like, no, 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 we got to call our timeouts. Afterwards, people were like, don't you think that was classless by them? I was like, no, that is your own team's fault for doing that.
From the 903, I feel bad if it's a sport where people aren't paid, but if it's pros, all bets are off. And I feel bad for myself. Somebody said they feel bad for themselves every day that they wake up.
Oh.
What do you need to do? What do we need to do to help you feel a little bit better?
We're here. Hey, I talked, serious note. I talked to somebody yesterday because of that segment that we talked about with Trey Wingo, and obviously it dipped into suicide prevention, everything like that. I talked with somebody yesterday, and hopefully we can start moving in the right direction.
I played that back for Adrian. I wanted her to hear how the kind of my more dude, I was having a tough morning yesterday, and that gave me some energy. The rest of that gave me a lot of energy that helped me kind of get through that day, because I was struggling. So I really appreciated how all that went down. From the 469, I beat my son by 50 every time at college football on the PlayStation. No mercy, no matter who the opponent is. And I totally agree. You're playing video games against your kid. You should destroy them and laugh about it the whole time, too.
Okay.
At some point, they're going to find a game they can beat you at, and you have to be willing to take that on, too.
Okay. So do you feel that way no matter what, or do they have to earn it? So, like, for example, I did that to Brandon once because we were at Nickelrama and saw Galaga, and he's like, oh, I'm so good at this game. He was terrible. And he talked so much S that while I made him stand there while I still hadn't lost one single spaceship and passed his mark, he was going to walk off. I was like, no, 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 no. You're going to stay right here, Mr. I'm so good again. He's like, I'm going to kick your butt. And I was like, no way.
Well, Avery had decided he wanted to play a video game tournament against me.
Oh.
And so he got to select 6 games and I got to select 6 games. And he had on his Switch, he had the access to all the old Nintendo games and everything too.
Yeah.
So I beat him at Super Smash Bros, but like barely. And he was like, you barely won. And I was like, all right, time to play Tecmo Bowl. Tecmo Bowl. And I think it was 27-0 in the first quarter. And he was like, can we move on to the next game now? And I was like, no, we will continue to play this game until you have understood how much better I am at you than you are at this. And then he did.
Cumulative points.
And guess what, Kevin? He decided to quit the video game tournament after that.
kids are soft.
I would also take him in Fortnite against a lot of people. So I would take him on my team anytime. He's really good at it.
You told me he's a quitter.
But I've seen him clutch up wins. I've seen it plenty of times where he's carried me to dubs.
Okay.
At one time, Jose Guzman, he carried him to a dub. He carried Dutch to a dub a couple times, too. Dutch will probably say that he carried him.
Dutch couldn't find a dub this weekend, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Between Michigan and Cleveland. Kevin, the week one rookie report is out. The number one rookie of all of the rookies in the NFL, Jared Verse of the Rams. Number two, Joe Alt. By the way, if you haven't watched Joe Alt play for the Chargers, it's going to be one of the best things that you get to see. That dude is absolutely dominant. At 6'8", being able to get lower than Max Crosby and just beat up on Max Crosby is an absolute thing of beauty. Do you see something on the...
Oh, no. Is this a topic
you were using tomorrow,
no,
Kevin?
No. I was just going to ask about Talisa Fuaga.
Oh. Wait, let me get to my list, Kevin.
Okay, sorry.
Xavier Worthy, number three.
Oh, that makes sense.
Number four, one of my favorite tackles from the draft. We'll be seeing him in the Saints this weekend, Talisa Fuaga.
He was really good.
He was one of the two rookies unbeaten in pass protection in week one, according to True Media, which would say, the Panthers stink. Don't forget that part. Derek Brown did get hurt. Don't forget that part. Mm. But Fuaga was one of my favorite to watch when it came to scouting this past season. He was fun. Zach Frazier for the Steelers. Kamari Lassiter for the Texans. Old Ladd McConkey for the Chargers as well. Sure. Bucky Irving. And at number nine, which Cowboy do you think is on the list?
Cooper Beebe.
All right. That is incorrect. Alec, which Cowboys rookie would you say had the best outing?
DeMarvian Overshone.
He's not a rookie.
That was his second year, but it's not like baseball where they're like, we know you played a little bit last year. We'll consider
it a Ranger game.
Year.
I'm in baseball mode.
All right. That is incorrect, though.
I would say I have no idea.
Okay. Marshawn Nealon was the one that NFL.com says was their best rookie. And he was good, man.
Yeah.
We talked about that with Broadus. We talked about it with Mickey. They lined him up outside. They lined up inside. Power is what we've said, Kevin, his primary asset. So that's going to be something that he's going to be very useful for. And he was right there at his number nine. And then Brian Thomas Jr. of the Jaguars, who started slow at camp, but is looking like a very good target for Trevor Lawrence as things have gone along here. So that is the rookie report right there. So, we watched Cooper Beebe. He looked really good. And Tyler Guyton, I think, stronger in run blocking.
Sure.
He struggled a little bit in pass blocking, but I love the way the Cowboys prepared for that and said, we will have somebody chip. We will have somebody there for you to help protect it a little bit. And then occasionally they gave him that opportunity to do it on his own. So that was one that I really liked. And then this, Kevin, I have a question. Which quarterback in the NFL do you trust the most right now, aside from Patrick Mahomes?
Oh, man, that was going to be my answer.
Do you trust Josh Allen?
Because
you went through the quarterback rankings and he was number two.
I don't.
But when it comes to trust,
it's tough to say Joe Burrow right now.
Yeah, Joe Burrow, they didn't look good.
It feels like CJ Stroud's too young. Lamar Jackson can't be the one.
I feel like I do trust Stroud the most.
Okay.
Because I feel like he makes the correct play more often than not. We talked about the numbers we saw from him on third and fourth down.
Yeah.
He was 9 for 9 for 85 yards with 2 touchdowns on third and fourth down. That's the money down. We talked about that with many players.
Yeah.
They call it the money down for a reason, and he was money.
Man, that's a tough question. Because I don't think it's Dak either.
From the 940, Brock Purdy. And from the 817, DeMarvian Overshawn is a rookie for us again, kinda. So
it's still a dumb answer.
Yeah,
by Alec, I'm gonna say it was a dumb answer. Brock Purdy is interesting because I know people think he's a bus driver, but it seems like he usually doesn't do anything to f up your game. You know what? I will say that.
Okay, all right, there you go. I always feel like when I'm watching him, it feels like the receivers are wide open, and it feels like because of the scheme, that his receivers, the windows that are there are much bigger windows, because you just watch the routes. Watch the route combinations and how you have one guy clearing out space so that the receiver that's coming into the picture has a big window for Brock Purdy to throw into. It gives more margin for error, but Brock Purdy does a very good job of finding those guys.
He does.
And I do got to give him a lot of credit for being able to find them. And then, you know, you were talking about Peyton and Eli talking trash about Ayuk not catching that ball. And the one in the end zone that could have been a touchdown, it was right there in his hands. He said, this is why you need preseason. Devontae Adams was on with Kay Adams and agreed. He was like, look, the reps in preseason are very important. You got to get those reps in your training camp. You got to be out there for it. Otherwise, those kinds of things happen. And while CeeDee Lamb did look good, there were a couple moments where when CeeDee Lamb's body got pushed, last year, you know, he would have made a catch like that. This year, there was a little interference with it, and it didn't come out the way you want. I feel like by the end of the season, CeeDee Lamb will be back in action. But in week one, I was like, man, that could have been a bigger day for him. And maybe it could have been had the Cowboys signed him a little bit earlier. But here we are today with Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb consisting of, what, $400 million or something like that?
Something like that.
Jeez, it's not Seager and Simeon. But, you know, the expectations aren't that high either. They do. That's what I'm saying.
And they, hold on.
They're half a billion dollars.
And they won a championship, not in their first year after signing the deal, but after that. So maybe not this year, but next year?
There you go.
Is that what you're suggesting?
That's what I'm suggesting.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, the demise of air yards on NFL passes. Let's go through the how and why. We'll do it next right here on The Fan.
Here they come on 3rd and 10, Knicks. Delivers, but they're going to be well short. Michael Burton.
KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan. They were well short because Bo Nix threw a really short pass. Now,
he's got to get better.
I want to talk, and this goes far beyond just Bo Nix. I want to talk about the demise of air yards on NFL passes, the how and why behind it all. But real quick, I wanted to give you an update. Probably not that surprising, but Deshaun Watson, quote, strongly denies the new sexual assault allegations, and he is lined up to play on Sunday per Stefanski.
Okay. Did I also throw out Tyreek Hill got up on the podium, spoke at length today.
Yes.
Multiple times, I want to say demanded, asked that the escalating officer be fired.
Okay.
But then also said, I agree and wish that I hadn't handled it the way I handled it, but quote, that doesn't give them the right to beat the dog crap out of me. And so I think he's got a good point on both sides there.
Okay. And look, and this is a very popular phrase from Reggie. He would say this a lot. Multiple things can be true.
I've often said that.
It doesn't have to be this or that. All right. So part of the reason I decided to dive in on this was Ted Wynn. We had him on yesterday. Yeah. From The Athletic. And so I started doing some research and I saw a tremendous tweet from Jake Grossman. And so it broke down the decline in air yards because, you know, like somebody will have, oh, I had a 50 yard pass, and you're like, oh, but how long was your pass really? And so in the last 10 years, the average air yard per pass has dropped more than a yard. Now, I get it. If you're just thinking about an isolated pass, 7 yards, 8 yards, who cares? But this is the average of everyone in the NFL. So that's a staggering drop. And it really started to drop a lot after 2019. So even in the last 5 years, it's dropped more than a yard per pass in the air.
All right.
All right. So that's what I wanted to start out with. And then I kind of wanted to dive into...
In the air.
In the air. Correct.
Okay.
I wanted to dive into some of the particulars about why that is.
All right. Can
you
I
have a
give
theory?
My theory immediately would be that the short passing game is becoming more prevalent in the as part of the run game.
Okay.
And while those passes aren't necessarily big gains in the air, they can become big gains on the ground because of the way the space that you create.
So two examples of that you can look at straight away. You have a lot of bubble screen RPOs, right?
Yes.
And then to kind of go along with that, a lot of play action plays that end up with a throw out into the flat.
Cooper Kupp's life.
Yeah.
And the reason he was as big as he was for that year was because they could do so much, and that he was considered a running back for them as a receiver. And I mean, even look at Christian McCaffrey, how much he can turn a big play into something from the backfield or from a short route.
So I think that's a big theory of why. From the 214, spread QBs transitioning to the pro style. That is an interesting theory as well. I had two more other theories to throw out there, but I want to use a few quarterbacks as an example. Bo Nix threw 12 passes this weekend that went past 10 yards.
Okay.
All right. And you might be like, oh, is that a lot? Or I don't know. He threw 42 times.
Okay.
And so his 3.3 yards per attempt on passes, that's the sixth lowest in any game since the merger.
Drew Brees and Sean Payton love the short slants.
Nothing wrong with that.
It's part of, I mean, that was part, again, part of making that part of your run game is by passing these short routes. So Sean Payton automatically, in my mind, is going to have a lot of those plays built in. Add in that it's a new quarterback, a young quarterback, that you don't want necessarily taking too many risks downfield, throwing too many interceptions, and exposing your team, giving them a chance to be in rhythm. If I'm Sean Payton and I'm looking at Bo Nix, I'm saying, hey, we're going to have a lot of short plays to get you comfortable.
Now, that's interesting. Let's throw in Caleb Williams. I know this doesn't focus as much on the ball in the air as it just is the takeaway of yards per pass. Caleb Williams averaged 3.2 yards per pass in his first game. So I'm going to throw it to Cut 12. This is Ted Wynn, when we had him on yesterday, kind of asking about the theory of younger quarterbacks and more simplistic offenses, which is what Tom Brady threw out as a reason for the shorter passes.
With these young quarterbacks, you know, you want to get them comfortable. You want to, you know, throw bubble screens or hitches and quickly get rid of the ball. And I think we're seeing a lot of that. I mean, just look at Bo Nix and what he did. Look at Caleb Williams and what he did. You know, they were just trying to get him comfortable, especially in week one too. And, you know, obviously, week one, there was a very low average air yards. These young quarterbacks, you know, they in the preseason, they saw very basic looks, and all of a sudden you get to the regular season and then you're getting more complicated coverages, and their brains are just kind of like scrambled right now. So they're just trying to figure things out. So I do think the youth of quarterbacks do play a part into it. And we saw, you know, a bunch of rookies to start week one.
Now, that's interesting for a variety of reasons. First of all, Ted Wynn was a wealth of knowledge yesterday, but that feeds into something that Tom Brady was talking about and something that you've mentioned several times in the last, I want to say, 2 months. Tom Brady talking about the push to use younger quarterbacks and having to kind of dumb down the playbook, in addition to the inherent problems that come along with the new collective bargaining agreement and less practice and everything like that. But something that Ted keyed in on right there is something that you've said for a couple months, is you've seen the shift that the league has made over the last, I don't know, 8 to 10 years in terms of not really doing preseason football.
Yeah.
And how much more complicated that makes it when you're like, hey, I know you think you were in an NFL game, but not really, right? Because this is what our defenses actually look like.
Yeah, I mean, when you go up to the line and you see Mike Zimmer has 15 different disguises before snap, you're like, oh, crap. Because you're taught, you know, the easiest thing is first go find those safeties. And then whenever Mike Zimmer's creating havoc up there, or back in the day, man, was it Pittsburgh? Chuck Knoll? I might be wrong about that. Pittsburgh had...
Or Bill Cowher.
They were fantastic against rookies. Bill Belichick against rookies. You just couldn't get a good game against him because they confused rookie quarterbacks, and it made it so much more difficult for them. So, yeah, man, the way that they're trying to get them comfortable, trying not to confuse them too much and grow. Even look at Mahomes, though, man. Look at how many of those passes, Kevin, he was on those, like we said, the RPO, the bubble screens, but even those ones that were slants across the middle that became big plays,
yeah.
Rashi Rice's pass wasn't a 15, 20-yard pass downfield. It was a pass that you, if the teams are going to give you, we're putting safeties deep to take it away from you, then you got to figure out how to get plays underneath so that you can make big plays happen from there.
See, I like this text from the 940 because I think this is one of my reasons as well. A lot of teams playing shell coverage, trying to keep everything in front of them and take everything away downfield.
What I just said there, yeah.
Cover three to the two high safety is because you can defeat us, but we're not going to let it be big chunks of yards and everything.
And again, if that's the case, then I, as a play caller, Andy Reid, I thought did a really good job of this in game one. I have to figure out how to clear out space so I can get big plays. Because if you're going to force me to only do these little small chunks underneath and I can't ever go up over the top, then I'm not going to be able to get a 40-yard touchdown. But if I'm able to clear out an area and get a short pass with my fast receiver, speed, you can't teach, it kills, all those things, he's going to be able to find a lane because the routes took all the safeties and corners one way and created a running lane that my receiver knows the running lane will be there whenever it happens.
Now, I know the answer, Corey.
Dick LeBeau is who I was thinking about. My bad. Thank you.
I know the answer is probably a combination of all of them. But if you looked at the idea of more bubble screens versus kind of switch from a cover three to more two high safeties versus generally worse quarterback play via a youth movement, is there one in particular that you would lean towards the most? Again, I understand it's a combination of a lot of different things.
I would venture to say the one I would lean to the most is just the way the defenses are playing teams first, because you're seeing it so often. And that's one of the things I'd love to see the McCarthy group figure out how to really take advantage of that. And then the second would be, I would say it's a lot more of the, not necessarily checkdowns, but knowing I can get short yardage plays turned into big plays to help us keep going down the field. And that's what I would say first. Then the youth at quarterback, because even the Aaron Rodgers, the Patrick Mahomes, those guys are still executing those plays the proper way.
Now, I have a side football question for you. I guess it's kind of football. How much do you care about Shannon Sharp?
A little. Okay. Listen, when he gave his Hall of Fame speech about Sterling and how he's the best one, and even though he's a Hall of Famer, like, that was amazing speech. But I really very scarcely listened to any of that.
Do you ever check out his Instagram?
No.
So if I told you that there was a video that was on his Instagram, it is now, they're trying to work on it and get it removed, but it popped all throughout social media that you can't see Shannon Sharp's face, but you can hear a woman moaning in the background, and it sounds like it's a sex video.
Hacked.
Of course.
Somebody hacked him.
He said, "Beware, my Shannon Sharp 84 Instagram was hacked this morning. My team and I are working vigorously to figure this out. Question, do you care? Question two, do you believe it was a hack? Or is that just the logical explanation you say whenever you accidentally post something or whatever that you probably shouldn't have?"
I just don't think, Kevin, that Shannon Sharp is accidentally posting a sex video on his own Instagram, or that it happened in his pocket.
That makes sense.
I just don't think that. So I do think whether it was somebody hacked it or somebody got his phone and did it, that's a different story. Like, that definitely could have happened. They could have gotten his phone and then said, "Hey, we're posting this." I think that is a more likely scenario.
Okay. And you are going to watch it?
I have no reason to watch that at the moment. I don't even have Instagram up yet.
What? Are you pulling it up right now?
I'm watching Medieval MMA on Instagram right now.
Okay, that might be a side thing that we need to do, I don't know, like an entire topic on another time. Medieval MMA is exactly what you might think, where people are in kind of the circle or the octagon fighting, but they have full armor suits on and medieval type weapons and everything like that. So, yeah, it's a happening. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. Coming up next, it's baseball time in Texas. So let's talk with our Texas Rangers insider, Jared Sandler. And you know what? Might have another special thing for you happening next right here on the Fan.
Here's the 2-1 delivery, and that's hit high in the air to deep right center field. That is crushed, and that is a monster home run for Jack Peterson. And he demolished it. Exit velocity, 109 miles an hour.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We're about to talk to Jared Sandler, courtesy of Blue Nail Roofing. Always appreciate that. But I feel like there's something else.
Let's get something away!
877-881-1053. Caller number 10 and 11.
Now.
We got two different giveaways happening right now. A pair of party passes and a pair of seats to the Cowboys-Saints game, courtesy of Miller Lite. We love Miller Lite. They're love a big them. Part of the reason why we do the Friday football feast. But callers number 10 and 11 right now, 877-881-1053. Now, on the Rangers front, we welcome in Jared Sandler. Jared, I'm curious about this, and I know what Boach said about maybe it could be a Dunning hybrid-esque role with Jack Leiter. And look, the team needs to go 17-0 to close out to make the playoffs.
Going to have to get more than three hits.
So in my estimation, that means they're not going to make the playoffs. So why would you move a 2025 rotation candidate away from starting?
So I think a few reasons. One, he's had a lot of innings this year, so it's not like you feel obligated to push him from an inning standpoint. And I guess the other question is, who are you taking out, right? So you got Eovaldi, you're not going to take him out.
Scherzer.
That's your answer?
Yes.
Okay, so, and I would say that might solve itself because, I mean, he makes a start on Saturday, then who knows, right? But I think there's an obligation maybe you feel to Max Scherzer because he's busted his tail to get back.
Okay.
That you have him start, you know, as long as he's able to. Obviously, DeGrom and Rocker are going to start. You're not necessarily looking to take a start away from Cody Bradford,
who is also a viable candidate for the rotation.
Yeah,
next
I mean,
year.
I would say, like, as far as you guys, yeah. I mean, yeah.
He's in.
It could change, but I would say right now, pencil it in. I don't think it means anything for Leiter in terms of, well, they don't view him as a starter. They don't, I mean, it's just, at the end of the day, they got seven starters. The guy who I think would make sense is Andrew Heaney, because I don't know. And the other thing you got to be sensitive towards with these guys, and you want to do right by your veterans, is you got to make sure that by pulling Heaney, you're not, you know, taking him out of contention to get a certain incentive, right?
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So those are other things you got to think about. Whereas that's not going to be an issue for Jack Leiter. But as long as that's not the case with Andrew Heaney, I think that would make sense. He's a free agent to be. Maybe not a part of your future plans. Maybe is. I don't know. Maybe they might re-sign him, but Jack Leiter definitely is, and he's going to go to camp with a chance to be in the rotation.
I've watched all of Jack Leiter's starts, and I've been very happy with the progression from him. I felt the most important part was him getting multiple opportunities in a row so that he could calm down. Like, I don't know if you agree with that, like that being a big factor, but it just seemed like once he got that second start, he just wasn't as juiced, and things weren't as frantic for him on the mound.
If I told you today that the performance you have in this show is going to determine whether or not you are able to make the money
that
you can make and live out your dream tomorrow, I mean, is that going to impact you versus
the first time we ever did drive time radio? We were talking 1,000 miles an hour. We were like, this is our shot. And then, that's when Grego came in and was like, what the hell are you doing, guys? You guys, I've heard y'all's show is better than that crap y'all put on yesterday. And then we got to come back the next day, and we were better the next day. So you're dead on, man. That's exactly how
so
I felt with it.
I do think that makes a difference, right? I think that it's been good for him to know that, hey, you're going to get the ball in 5 days and have at it. Let it rip. Grow. Take your lumps. Don't feel like you got to be perfect. I think all those things play a role, especially for a number two overall pick who has an added spotlight on him. I mean, let's be honest here. Cody Bradford, who was a fifth round pick or something like that. Cody Bradford didn't pitch with the same level of spotlight or expectation as Jack Leiter. Right. And Cody Bradford was a high pick. I mean, a fifth round pick is someone you pick with the expectation that he could be a really good player for you.
I want to ask more about Cody Bradford, but I want to see if I can pry something out of you real quick. If you have any nuggets from a picture that I saw of you on the internet standing next to Jack Leiter and Garrett Cole talk and Al Leiter. And if there's anything that you could glean from that, or is it all off record and you can't talk about it?
So that picture, I think Dave Raymond and I were standing right next to them. We moved pretty quickly after that picture. Anthony Volpe was a part of that conversation. Yeah. Then he went, I think he had to go take batting practice, but I was standing in the vicinity of the three of them, not close enough to hear what was being discussed word for word, but close enough to hear a phrase here or there. And it was clear that they were having a pitching discussion. And I spoke to Jack about it the next day, and he talked very glowingly about the opportunity to learn from guys around the league, but, you know, specifically Gerrit Cole, and hearing his perspective about, you know, how his stuff has changed over time and how he's had to, you know, evolve. And, you know, he maybe when he first came up, he was more of a thrower, and that, you know, he developed his secondary stuff, you know, late in his time with Pittsburgh, early in his time with Houston. And then he took another step forward. And a lot of it was just about, you know, the trajectory and the growth and things not always happening right away for people. And, you know, just because it doesn't happen right away doesn't mean your ceiling's any lower, right? It's just a matter of whether it happens or not. And that's, I think, more or less what that conversation was like. And, you know, Jack's been exposed to those types of conversations for a lot of his life because of his dad. But I think it's now different that he is a major league pitcher being able to, it's not like, oh, hey, kid, yeah, go get him, throw that fastball. It's like, all right, there's a different level of respect and a different type of conversation he's now able to have with some of these people.
That's great. You mind if I ask about Cody Bradford too? What's been, is it the mental makeup of the guy as much as the physical ability to do the job? Because it just seems like his presence on the mound is something that I really admire about Cody Bradford.
Yeah, I think that there is a level of conviction in what he does. And knowing that what he doesn't do is throw 95, but that he can throw 90 and have success.
Yeah.
Because now, here's the reality. You know, we always champion these guys, understandably so. They deserve it. But Cody Bradford has less margin for error than Jacob DeGrom because he doesn't throw as hard, right? So those guys are always going to face that. But it does force those guys to some degree to really advance as pitchers, not throwers. And I think Cody Bradford is very advanced as a pitcher and understanding what his pitches do, how they play off of one another. Obviously, command and control has been, you know, emphasized more for him because he can't get away with, you know, 90 down the middle, right? And he's had to really develop a breaking ball to go along with a changeup and all these things. And I think it all plays a role, but I think between the ears, we saw this right off the bat last year when he made his major league debut against Atlanta, and it wasn't like he mowed down the Braves, but you could just tell there was no temerity on the mound. It was just like, hey, yeah, let's go, let's party. You know, me versus the Braves, sweet, I dig it. And, you know, that's backed up by how he performed in the playoffs. He was so good for the Rangers in the playoffs in various roles out of the bullpen.
I know it doesn't get anywhere near as much attention, but do you care about the starting pitching triple crown, because Scooble has an opportunity to win it, and it really looks like Chris Sale is going to win it.
Yeah, I think it's cool. It's not as it's obviously not as big as the hitting triple crown, but yeah, I mean, I think it doesn't get the attention because frankly, starting pitching performances don't get the attention.
Sure,
right, but I think it's a tremendous accomplishment that's incredibly rare. I think, you know, I said this early on when we were in Detroit, I thought Scooble was going to win the American League Cy Young. He, to me, is the best pitcher in the American League if Gerrit Cole is not 100% healthy. And he is absolutely dastardly and a big reason why the Tigers have come back in the playoff race.
Are you excited at all for Chris Sale, who was top six 7 years in a row but never won a Cy Young?
Am I excited for him to win one?
Yeah,
similarly to Gerrit Cole last year finally winning one. But I think with Chris Sale, I mean, his is a huge surprise because he missed so much time and just couldn't stay healthy. By all accounts, you know, he's a great teammate. Guys around the league love him. And yeah, I am happy for him.
Thank you very much, Jared Sandler. We look forward to hearing you in just a few minutes. By the way, Corey, quick football update. Raheem Mostert is out for Thursday Night Football. And it looks like A-Chain,
Jeff Wilson Jr.,
is going to be a game time decision.
All right. Jeff Wilson Jr. is your guy then.
All right. Roll home with Rangers baseball. You got Arizona and Texas coming up at 2:40. Pregame coming up in just a few minutes. We're the KNC Masterpiece. We'll be back tomorrow, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on 105.3 The Fan.